The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch means it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and it's time for So What's Your Story? The coolest place on your dial because it's the only program originating in Houston that is devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored, award-winning KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication studies at the University of Houston downtown with Roxy Russell. She's back in town, working the boards and stepping in just a bit. You know, the range of stories and themes presented on this show has been indefinable, and the scope of talent found in our city is equally indescribable, with every guest teller having one thing in common. Each is an extraordinary person who tells stories for the same reason we eat and sleep, because we have to. And tonight, we continue to spotlight our rich reservoir of talent by exploring storytelling in business. Because despite what many business leaders think, storytelling is not the newest kid on the block. For the seasoned entrepreneur has always had his telling tools sharpened and accessible. I have one of those tested tellers sitting next to me right now. Dr. Walter Blanchard has been an independent corporate development consultant for over 30 years, with an emphasis on turnaround issues and financial restructuring, all of which are very storytelling and communicatively oriented, you'd be interested to know. He's currently president of Corporate Development Solutions and has been a leader in the field of corporate development. It's a concept using a systems theory approach to organizational development. Now, that's the very short course in Walter's extensive background in consulting, but it is Dr. Blanchard's applications of storytelling to contemporary business that make his revelations both invigorating and inspirational. Walter holds a PhD in human and organization from Fielding Graduate University, with research focus on the social construction of meaning in organizational communication. With interest in how meaning is formed, it's not surprising that his dissertation explored organizational storytelling and the social construction of reality, and I'm going to ask him to break that down for the layperson in just a few minutes. Businessman, storyteller, my new friend, Walter Blanchard. Walter, welcome.
Thank you very much, Hank.
This is really terrific, and this honestly is a pleasure. As I told you, this is not a theme that we've treated in the past. I've made reference to it, and usually at the puzzling eyes of those who sit next to me. But this is a big deal. You know, for years, business leaders have known the value of a good story, but many of them view it as a new find, and it isn't. It's always been essential for success. Why is it, Walter, do you think that there's such a surge of interest in storytelling among business leaders in recent years?
I think it's a skill set that's been taken for granted by many people for many years. And it didn't stand out in the lexicon of business skill sets until they realized that motivating people and leading them had more to do than with stimulating them and making their minds, you know, work for them.
You had mentioned to me a few minutes ago about that trust paradigm. To talk about that, that's a great formula.
Well, I think the trust paradigm is that if we're going to deal with each other and help ourselves communicate, we have to have trust. To establish trust is an honor. But if one is trusted, then you can become someone's trusted advisor. If you're a trusted advisor, then sometimes you become their teacher.
Very good.
If you've reached that point, then you know you're successful.
Yeah, that's magnificent. I love that format. I'm going to remember that, advisor to teacher, because I really think that works. We're entering a time when creative thinkers really have become much more in vogue. We were talking about that a little bit earlier with some of the folks out in the lobby. And I think that there is certainly a place for analytical thinkers, computerized individuals, people who are mathematics-centered. But creative thinkers have really made an indelible impression in the world nowadays. And what would you attribute that to? Why the acknowledgement, do you think?
Well, I think that we realize that some of those analytical skills are just can only go so far.
Yeah.
That stories may stimulate people in a way that are amazing. In fact, they don't even have to be completely true.
No, most of them aren't. But who cares? They connect us. right?
That's right. They connect us.
That's they right. do something. They make people feel that they matter, and they make us realize that we matter to each other. And there's something very special like that, and special as that, and that's been going on for, I don't know, what, but a million years or something like that. It's and that's not an exaggeration either. Amazing. Storytelling is really the oldest form of expression as we know it. And no texting, no tweeting, just a whisper in the ear or a meeting in the middle of town square, just people talking, people listening. And it's so old, but it's really become new. And Walter, your story is about you and your father creating a company and that being put to test, which we're interested in finding out. Tell us a little bit about that. It's the overcoming impossible odds, you believe, as being the theme here. What's your story?
My father was in the packaging business all his life. He only had two jobs. He lost both of those. They were the same jobs. He was fired from the first one after 20 years because I think he was a difficult employee. Either he spoke up or he spoke back, and he was not rewarded for that. He found another job, and 25 years later, he was downsized, a euphemism for firing, of course, in today's society. He moped around a while. He had lost my mother a couple of years before, and I could see that he was not stimulated, not sure where he wanted to go. He needed more money. And I came to him one day and I said, let's create a virtual company. He said, what's that? Actually, I didn't use the word virtual. I used the word mobile company. In the past, people that were in packaging business would have a location and you'd bring your goods to them or your product to them and they'd package it and they'd send it back to you. But I realized that on the East Coast, some people were moving the packaging machines around themselves. And he said, do you think that would work? And I said, well, let's print some business cards. Let's go try. So we went out and called on an old friend of ours who was an engineer with a chemical company here in Houston. And he listened to our story and he said, wow, that's interesting. He reached in his drawer and he pulled out a little package, actually called a sachet, 75 grams of cupric hydroxide, a fungicide. He said, this is supposed to be sent to the Cameroons in Africa to protect the cocoa crop. And he said, this is a job we turned down. We don't have the machinery to do that, but you're saying you do? I said, no problem. My father was rolling his eyes. Not easy to do, actually. He said, well, just a minute. He went and got his boss, several other engineers. They all gathered in the room. They said, are you telling us that you could do this? Yes. I said, how many do you need? He said, 4 million bags.
Wow.
4 million. No problem. My father's eyes were rolling again. He said, well, that's great. He said, we're going to have to call the World Bank and get a green light on this, but why don't you bring your people and your equipment over and we'll get started. The only problem was I had no people. We didn't have any employees. So I said, by the way, how long do we have to make this 4 million bags? He said, 31 days. The ship sails, the last ship sails, to protect the crop in 31 days. It's 40 long containers. You've seen these things on the freeways being hauled around by big trucks.
Right.
40 containers, no problem. My father went to work on putting the machinery in shape to bring it over to the plant. I went down to the Texas Workforce Commission. I told the counselor there that we needed 60 people, and we needed them in the morning at 7 o'clock at this location. He said, well, you'll have to pay more than $6 an hour. I said, I'll pay $7.50. I'll pay their gasoline if they can come. I'll buy their lunch. I want to take their excuses away. And he said, well, you can have 1,000 people with those terms. So I met with those people. I told them I didn't care if they were black or white, brown, green. It didn't matter. I didn't care if they were tall or short. I just wanted them to show up because there's a place in a packaging line that just simply needs somebody there to make it move forward. The next morning, you know, we were all set to go. But during the night, my father said he had some chest pain. My father had ischemia. He'd been a lifelong smoker. And he was taken to the hospital, and they told him he had a heart attack. So my heavy lifter, my guy, my technical genius, who had spent his whole life making these machines fly, was not going to be able to help us. I told the men that worked for us, the mechanics and the electricians, we're not going to have his expertise. We're going to have to do this on our own. They were worried. I said, we can pull this off. We started in, had lots of mechanical problems. I wondered if we'd be able to pull it off, but I decided that if I was going to be the leader, I had to act like we were going to make it happen. Some people quit immediately because it was a difficult job. It was hot. The cupric hydroxide got on your skin. You had to wear gloves and glasses and a helmet. People didn't like those working conditions, so I kept hiring more every week on the first, second, and third shift. The company began to count how many we'd produced and how many we still needed to produce, and they got worried and they flew to Africa to renegotiate the contract. There was a penalty clause that if we didn't make the $4 million, it would cost them a lot of money. So they got the Cameroons to waive the penalty clause. I heard about it. And I confronted the general manager at the plant, and I said, "You've bet against me." And he said, "Come on, man. My job's on the line here." I said, "What if we make that $4 million? How about a bonus?" He said, "Sure, no problem." We got better every day. At the 30th day, a day before the deadline, we put the 40th container on board the ship. And I turned to him and I said, "This is fascinating, isn't it? We did it." He said, "Yes, I'm amazed. I didn't think you could." I said, "That bonus is sweet." He said, "Actually, I never got permission to pay you that. I didn't think you could do it." I said, "What are you going to do about it?" He said, "I'm going to go to work for you." And to his credit and that company's credit, they paid us that $40,000 bonus. We threw a party, and I invited all the employees at the plant and my people to come. We had music. We had barbecue. I took the $40,000 and cashed that check, and I got ones and fives and tens, and I put it in a big bag, and I poured all that money out on the table. And I said, "Those of you that have been with me the whole way, come up and get the bonus that I promised to you." And they walked up, and a lot of them just wanted to have their picture taken with the money. They stuffed ones and fives and tens in each pocket, danced to the music. Everybody had a ball. The people that were running the plant said, "You know, we might hire several of your people if you don't mind." I went, "That's fine. I want them to have a full-time job," because we were going to pull off. In fact, one memory comes to mind. The first day of the job, a woman that worked for us had some great-looking lunch that she had brought. And I said, "That smells great. Would you bring me some of that tomorrow?" She said, "Sure." The mechanic said, "How about me?" And the other guy said, "Me too." And I said, "Would you like to feed us all?" She said, "Well, my husband's a chef and he's out of work." I said, "I'm going to hire you both to feed us. Bring us breakfast tacos at 7 in the morning, lunch at noon, and a 7 p.m. for the second shift. Give me a meat, three vegetables, a dessert, iced tea, cornbread, rolls, whatever you can make." They did that for 30 days, 7 days a week. We pulled it off.
Wow. 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 What a great story. That is chock full of shifts, you know, a lot of emotional shifts. Let's talk about your dad. You know, let's talk about your dad. He was really the protagonist of this story. What a great guy. And you were mentioning he's really like your brother. You love him like a brother.
Yes, yeah, people told us we were more like brothers than father and son.
This is a tough question, but how do you love a brother different from a father? How is that love different? How would you describe that?
Well, I think he treated me different than he might have treated anybody but a son. We were competitive in fun ways. He had a habit of, when we fished, he would always measure the fish to see who got the longest one. When we went deer hunting, he would always measure between the horns to see who had done the best, like that. In fact, one time he actually took the antlers that he collected home and sawed them in half and pulled them apart and repaired them with plaster of Paris and covered it with a piece of skin so that he could win our little contest of a $5 bet, like that.
I love the way you told that story. The way it unfolded was amazing because it's as if it happened right here. And good storytellers do that, Walter. They let the story unfold as if they are literally resurrecting it in front of us. You know, and you like told that story for the first time. I know you've told that story many times, but every story you tell,
that's
really
right,
like the first time. How do you feel about your dad each time you tell the story? In other words, what kind of a feeling do you have about your father each time you tell the story? You know what I'm saying?
Well, it brings him back to the present with me.
Yeah.
And I wonder, while we were doing that job, by the way, how he would react to my being in charge of the job rather than him. And he was very pleased.
Yeah.
In fact, he was delighted. One thing I didn't say is the main man that I had hired, the mechanic electrician, was not sure we were going to do it.
Yeah.
And I had pulled him aside and I said, "Listen, I need your help. I don't think I can do this without you. And here's what I'm going to do for you. At the end of the job, if we do all the work and we collect all the money, I'm going to take you to the Ford dealer. We're going to pick out a pickup truck. I'm going to buy it for cash in your name, and you're going to drive it home."
Yeah. Yeah, marvelous. You know, when you tell that story, there are a couple of things that come to mind. An incredible level of confidence in your part. And the success of that story really comes from a dream, an anticipation, what you expect these people to do. You have a lot of faith in the human condition. Does that make sense?
I do.
You really did. And you talked about trust earlier. And trust is, it's that expectancy that the verbal or nonverbal can be relied upon. And I think you have a lot of faith in the human condition, regardless of the statement and regardless of what happens in our lives in terms of how things can get distorted and sometimes just a little tainted and clouded. You seem to be pretty optimistic. I think that's a good thing to carry with us.
I am an optimist, and I hope that's contagious.
Yeah, I hope it is, too. You are listening to So What's Your Story? With storyteller Dr. Walter Blanchard on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. This is Hank Rubicek and Roxy Russell, and our newest member of the team, Shannon McCurchy. Walter, you were found at the Moth. Roxy did a pretty good job, right? Roxy, very good. You can still stay here, and work for absolutely nothing. We still love you. Don't worry about it. Now, the monthly Story Slams at Stereo Live, great venue, by the way, 6400 Richmond. The topics change every month. When Roxy found you, you were talking about karma.
That's right.
What'd you say about karma? Did you get a chance to speak?
I did get a chance to speak.
Of course. What'd you say?
The Western mind thinks that karma is you get what you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern minds don't quite think exactly like that. Going along with that Western mind, though, I told a story about witnessing an accident when I was a 15-year-old boy, an accident where people were killed, and how we coped with that moment.
Wow.
And I came to realize that if the people that had hit themselves head-on in front of me, and that I observed that, if they had left their homes 10 minutes or maybe 10 seconds earlier or later, and I had left my home 10 seconds or later as we drove down at dawn to go fishing with my dad, we wouldn't have seen that accident, and there wouldn't have been any accident. But karma says it was supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, did those people deserve that? I think not.
Yeah. You don't believe in karma. You don't believe it's supposed to happen.
I'm skeptical.
Yeah. Yeah. I am, too. I used to believe in the magic of the moment. I used to believe in living for the moment, and I do. But I don't know if things can be controlled. I sometimes think about that. That's a good question. I sometimes think about that. I don't know. To Tell the Wind by Peter Guber evangelizes the power of story, just getting back on that for a moment. And frankly, his insights aren't all that new. Like, should we think about karma? That's new. And I love that. Now I can't get my mind off of it. But nevertheless, it's worth noting, people are moved by emotion. And that story that you just shared with us is obviously emotional. It's a bedrock of emotion. And we forget that. Why do you think people forget about emotion? Why do you think they forget that emotion works?
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It brings out potential weakness in people's minds.
Yeah.
That they don't want to be influenced by that.
I wanted to share a couple of things with you, and I'm going to read this, if I may, to you and our listeners. I've done a lot of consulting about storytelling, with storytelling, in the context of storytelling with a number of people, especially financial advisors, and I explained to them that it's best to have stories of success in order to woo potential clients. Advertisers have used stories as their primary weapon for persuading people to make decisions about who they are, what they are, and what they buy. But about 10 years ago, I spent some time talking to a physician friend of mine who I knew fairly well. I can't say we were best friends. It was a woman who I knew. And she shared something with me. And it was all about storytelling. Because of the story she told, and it's best if I just share this with you. I wrote this in my journal. You know, physicians have long known the precious healing comes to patients who are encouraged to reveal fears about their own illnesses, as well as those suffered by family members. And this is a conversation that I remembered with her, and I know that medicine is an unbelievable industry, and the idea of communication as an anecdote for narrow-mindedness and prejudice and for healing has always been ruminating in the minds of good physicians, but it really does enhance the healing process. And we talked about this a little bit, and this is what she said. I guess my fear around death is isolation, because even though I have all these friends, I know life goes on. I want them to live and have fun, but I want them to tell me that I mattered to them. I mean to tell them openly. I know how hard it is to be around somebody who's actively dying. I know how tiring it is because I've witnessed it as a doctor so many times. I made lots of mistakes. I didn't listen to my patients enough. I treated them like patients, not like people who matter to me. And I have to tell you, I really gained a lot of insight about her physiologically and psychologically by listening to that scenario. And I think she helped me more than I helped her. I recall thinking how remarkable in her quest to make sense out of life, pondering her own unsettling sense of irony, she seems more grounded than ever before. And I remember thinking to myself, Walter, the power of story. The power of story. That was an amazing story that you told me, and I wanted to share that because I wanted us to deal with the notion of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
How do you transfer that kind of in-depth sensitivity to a businessman's life? How do you explain to a person in the industry, look, you just heard this stuff from a doctor. I know it's not a life and death situation, but understand that emotion works. It's important to feel. How would you explain that?
I think I would try to give them an example of where that had worked for me, where getting acquainted with people trying to build a relationship so that we could have a contract between each other is very important to recognize what it is that's important to them. So if I go into somebody's office, for example, and I see golf clubs, I talk about golf. If I see a picture of a fish on the wall, I talk about fish. Mm-hmm. If I see pictures of grandchildren or wives or kids, that's what I want to talk about because I know a family is important.
Right.
I also know that if that's missing, maybe something there is missing too.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. So I try to be sensitive to the possibility that I shouldn't talk about everything.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your dissertation. This is a tough one, but how would you in about a minute explain to the layperson what your dissertation was all about? Storytelling and business.
I worked for Litton Industries and became known as a storyteller. In fact, the CEO would often ask me to tell a story. And I would say to him, Jack, it's your story. He said, yeah, but you tell it better. And so when we entertained clients or something like that, or we were in some kind of a setting where a story was important, he would coax me into doing that. I realized that in companies, whether they were large or small, there was somebody that was called the storyteller. You might have to prompt people to think about that for a while. When I began my research, I asked people in businesses that were public and private, who's the storyteller? Walt Disney World is a perfect example because the people there in the HR, 30,000 employees, they said, storyteller? Oh, sure, Jim Verity, absolutely. He's the guy that you want to spend a couple of days with when you're a new employee. And I said, why? They said, well, because he was a friend of Walt Disney and he knows everything here. I said, really? In fact, if you go to Walt Disney World today in Orlando and you walk down Main Street, you see names up on the windows above you. Jim Verity's name is there.
Wow.
He's an institution.
That's amazing. Roxy, what did you think of Walter when you saw him with the moth?
I was honestly really impressed, not just the magnitude and the power of his stories, but how structured they were. You know, because I feel like in the moment, I know for me, if I get thrown up there, I'd be like, I don't know. Like, I would forget. But just he went up there just flawlessly and just the mm-hmm. structure of it, just even the structure of the story that he just told.
Yeah.
Was just,
it's about ownership. It's really mm-hmm. it's about ownership. It's about making it coherent. It's about sequencing it. Mm-hmm. It's about really understanding the most important thing.
It's about one other thing in my mind, too. It's about performance.
Yeah.
I asked those storytellers, do you ever think of yourself as an actor? As on a stage, and they said 9 out of 10 at least said yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Great.
Do you enjoy that? Yes.
Yeah. You got to. You have to. You have to. But Roxy makes a good point. You know, the ums, you get up there, those vocal segregates, they really are rotten. They're terrible. But the idea of really owning a story, the idea of pausing. Gee, yeah. There's the thought. You can pause and actually think. There's an idea.
That's right.
But structuring is an important thing. You've got to be able to sequence a story. You really do. Roxy, did you have a good birthday, by the way?
I did. It was relaxing. It was everything I wanted for 8 days.
Oh, that's great. Tell everybody what they want to know about the Houston Storytellers Guild because they rock, and they're the ones who will tell us everything that we need to know about being a great storyteller like Walter.
Hank, it can only happen at the Houston Storytellers Guild. Monthly swaps are held at the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. And always check out the Houston Storytellers Guild site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for updates and all the fun happenings.
Thanks, Roxy. And to Shannon. Shannon, where are you? You're out there?
Hi.
Newest member of our team. You're doing a great job on Facebook, giving us all sorts of great stuff to read about storytelling. Everybody's got to check it out. Tell us a little bit about Facebook.
Hi, Hank. I would like to remind all of our listeners out there to send your comments and questions to ruby.story@gmail.com. That is ruby.story@gmail.com. And visit our So What's Your Story Facebook page. And be sure to like us on the way out. We look forward to having writer and storyteller Natasha Robbie, another one of Roxy's moth finds, as our guest next week.
Great. Thanks, Shannon. We're looking forward to that. This is Hank Rubicek and Roxy and Shannon. You're enjoying guest storyteller Dr. Walter Blanchard on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston or KPFT.org if you are listening online. But whatever avenue you took to get here, we are glad that you did. Walter, are you getting back to storytelling? Are you going to get back to the moth or any kind of fun stuff in the near future?
Oh, I plan to do that. Yeah. I enjoyed it more than I expected.
Yeah, you know. Right. What do you think of this so far?
I think it's a fun place to come, and the people are enthusiastic. More people need to pay attention to what's going on.
You've been on radio before?
I have been on business radio before. Much better.
Yeah, of course.
More intimate and not quite.
Is that the truth?
Oh, I'm serious about that.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
Sometimes the questions come at you like a machine gun, you know, on business radio like that.
Yeah. You have a little more time to think here.
And it's Formula Mag, too.
Yeah. A quick glance at companies and consultants on the internet, and you find out that they really do endorse storytelling, and you find out storytelling is in such high demand. Stories produce experiences, and experiences really do leave lasting impressions. Stories convey human faces, real people, case studies of people impacted by a product or a service. Stories about success are stories we want to hear. Storytelling isn't new. The longevity of telling as a medium reminds us that our collective urge to tell our tales, from the fantastic to the senseless, will thankfully endure. Thank you, Walter, so much for being here. I hope we can get you to come back. I really do, because there's a lot of great stuff I want to talk about, maybe around the holidays. We really appreciate your refreshing take on storytelling and business and for your commitment to endorsing human expression in a setting not always seen as one that invites the human experience. Thank you, Roxy and Shannon, for all that you're doing out there. You're doing a great job. This is So What's Your Story, Houston's original story show, a truly great show. Thanks to all of you. So, where you are, stay where you are, because Scooter, where are you? Okay, I'm looking for Scooter. Oh, there he is. I got worried there for a moment. My God. Okay, stay there, because Scooter is next with the inner side. To complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT, make 90.1 a part of every day and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story. And ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story. And I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.